Hello and welcome to another episode of Soccer Pints, your one-stop shop for all things American soccer. I'm your host, Will Clark. If you aren't familiar, Soccer Pints is an American soccer podcast where we cover everything we can about U.S. soccer, Americans in Europe, Major League Soccer, and many other exciting topics. Each episode, we will also be featuring beer from some of the best breweries across the country while we discuss these topics. So if you have a local brewery that you would like featured in a future episode, let me know. I'd love to have them on the show. Now, last week, we broke down the roster for the U.S. U-20 Men's World Cup team that begins play tomorrow, Saturday, May 20th, in their opener against Ecuador. We learned more about head coach Mike Iveras' decision-making into the squad, why certain players weren't released for the tournament, and we gained an understanding of his expectations as well. And this week, I'd planned to spend the bulk of the episode around making predictions for the tournament, going over which players could have breakout performances and who realistically had a chance to make the U.S. senior team sooner rather than later. And while I will still plan to spend some time on that, the biggest topic this week is going to be spin around the news that came out on Tuesday morning of this week when Folarin Balogun, aka Flo, had his one-time switch approved by FIFA to officially become a member of the U.S. men's national team and giving the USA another massive victory over England in the process of doing so. I have refused to say his name on this show since the beginning of the year until he committed to our national team, so I couldn't be happier with his decision and the impact that his allegiance could have on our program. So today, we will take a look at what the program looks like now that we have Flo's commitment and how that could impact the summer roster decisions. We will also make predictions for our U-20 men's national team for their World Cup, and we will wrap up today with some Q&A and my final thoughts of the week. As always, let's start today's episode by talking about a new beer feature this week, and this week's feature was recommended to me by my friend Mike Reynolds. I should actually say given to me as a gift more than recommended, but it hit the spot and was excellent, so I had to get another and feature it this week, and that is the Drowned Lands Brewing out of Warwick, New York. About an hour and a half outside of New York City, this farm brewery is an absolute new favorite of mine, and today I am fortunate enough to get to drink their Silent Stars, which is a 6.8% IPA that's brewed with Pilsner malt, malted spelt, raw wheat notes, hopped in the Whirlpool, and dry hopped exclusively with Citra. This beer has an absolutely gorgeous pale yellow haze and is as bright and juicy as they are. These are their words, not mine. You can taste the orange zest, peach, juicy melon, and what tastes like orange and pink Starburst candies. This is just one that you could absolutely crush on a regular basis. The Drowned Lands opened up back in late 2020 when owner Mike Cry, using a former correctional facility administration building as his brew house and strictly adheres to an oak barrel beer fermentation systems, which aren't like most brewery stainless steel tanks that help control conditions. It's perfect for Drowned Lands as small batches and allows nature to influence the beer making process, which takes anywhere from 6 months to 2 years here. And as Cry says, their saying is slow down, stay a while. And they truly take the same mindset with their beer. The brewery itself is around 15,000 square feet and features a large patio, a deck space, and an event space. And while I haven't personally visited, the pictures I have seen look absolutely stunning. And when I make my way up to New York later this summer, it will absolutely be a stopping point to reward myself for the drive up. So thank you to Mike and the Drowned Lands for letting me feature you this week. Can't wait to visit and try some more of your delicious concoctions. Cheers. Well, if you were like me on Tuesday morning when the news broke of Balogun officially joining the U.S. men's national team over England and Nigeria, you couldn't help but make sure you told everyone you could about the massive victory that our program now had. I know I said it gave the U.S. a victory over England, but in reality, it isn't about that. It is about having an incredible talent join the squad at a position that has been of relative weakness for the U.S. for so many years. It instantly gives the U.S. an attacking option that some would argue we have never had before. He has international star potential written all over him after scoring 19 goals in the French Ligue 1 this year. So, how does this extraordinary talent fit into the U.S. men's national team, and what does his commitment mean for the summer squads? We have spoken of the dual national debate before. We have seen the impact of those players who have chosen to represent the U.S. over other countries. Current guys like Yunus Musah, a former England youth national team teammate of Flo's. Sergiño Dest, Ricardo Pepi, Malik Tillman, Anthony Robinson, Cameron Carter-Vickers, just to name a few. There have been plenty of former players too. We have also seen the reverse effect when we have lost out on a potential talent to someone else. Giuseppe Rossi, choosing Italy, comes to mind. But Flo feels different to me. And I should clarify something. Balogun goes by the name Flo, and Flo is so much easier to pronounce. So he will be known as Flo on this show. With the U.S. facing off against Mexico on June 15th in the Nations League semifinals, I fully expect Flo to be a part of that squad, most likely slotting right into the lineup. The U.S. will also then turn around and compete in the 2023 version of the Gold Cup with group play beginning on June 24th. Interim head coach Anthony Hudson has already claimed that there will not be much of a difference between the two rosters for the Nations League and the Gold Cup squads. Flo's commitment provides the U.S. national team with a legitimate goal-scoring striker. Prior to his commitment, I would have slotted Ricardo Pepi into the number one spot on the striker depth chart. And Pepi didn't even make the World Cup roster just 6 months ago. We have Josh Sargent, we have Haji Wright, we have Jesus Ferreira, Jordan Pefock is still out there, Brandon Vasquez, Daryl Dike before his Achilles tear. We've been in this weird state of transition, it feels like, for so many years of having to force someone into that role that really wasn't suited to be an out-and-out bona fide striker. So now with Flo, it will allow better link-up play for our wingers and our attacking midfielders and should also allow for service into the box with a reliable striker who can create chances out of nothing. We haven't had that since the early Jozy Altidore years. Do I expect Flo to immediately come in and just bang in goal after goal after goal and be the savior for U.S. soccer that we've so desperately been trying to crown over the years? No. He could, but he's still young. I caution this many times with players like Christian Pulisic or Brennan Aaronson or Weston McKennie. Previously, we put the pressure of the world on Landon Donovan or even Freddie Adu way back when. It's exciting to see him join the U.S., though. He doesn't just score goals. He is a true professional, despite being so young. Being in the Arsenal Academy growing up has helped that. Going on loan in France and finding success has increased his maturity overall. He can finish goals. He moves off the ball well. He's intelligent. His awareness is extremely high. He plays with a purpose. He has the ability to shine for the U.S. at the international level. He is going to fit into this U.S. lineup seamlessly, regardless of who is the head coach when all is said and done. You should expect to see some combination along the front line of Pulisic, Flo, and Timothy Weah. Maybe throw Reyna or Aaronson in the mix too. Maybe play a two-forward combo of Flo and Pepi. We are going to be a much tougher, attack-minded team than ever before. So while the Nations League and Gold Cup are technically meaningless across the globe, truly only a regional bragging rights accomplishment, I want the U.S. to beat Mexico emphatically with this young core group of players on June 15th. I want to see Flo integrate into this squad and be a top performer. I want to see them collectively go about their business at the Gold Cup and dominate the competition and set the stage for the world to know that the U.S. squad is coming in strong for 2026 and is going to be a tough opponent to match up against. Flo continues with that trend. His commitment signals more respect. His commitment signals a warning to the rest of the region, to the rest of the world. The U.S. isn't going away. They are going to continue to add talent to this squad. They're going to be a force in the future. So I will leave you all with one last point on this and gratitude that is well-deserved and due for me. Thank you to Greg Berhalter for laying the groundwork on the recruitment of Flo. I don't care about the differences of opinions that we've had with Greg. I don't care about previous decisions that Greg has had. We've moved on from that. But when credit is deserved and due, I give it. Greg helped tremendously with his involvement early on in getting Flo to see the opportunity that he could have with U.S. soccer. Anthony Hudson and the rest of the squad continued on after Greg's contract ended. Flo ultimately decided to choose us. But thank you to Greg for helping get this done. That's all. All right, moving on to the U20 World Cup and my predictions for this U.S. team and the tournament overall. As I have mentioned, the tournament starts tomorrow, Saturday, May 20th. There will be a total of 24 teams competing for the championship, including two new debut nations in the Dominican Republic and Israel. As an added plug, I should make sure everyone is aware that Mexico failed to qualify over the likes of the Dominican Republic, Guatemala, Honduras, and of course, the good old USA. But there are still top nations in France, Italy, and England out of Europe, Brazil, Argentina, and the third place finisher back in 19, and the US's first opponent in Ecuador out of South America, runners up from 2019 in South Korea, and tough African opposition in Senegal and Nigeria, amongst many others. The path for the US will not be easy. They were placed into Group B with the aforementioned Ecuador, Fiji, and Slovakia. Match day one features the US against Ecuador. Then they will play Fiji on Tuesday the 23rd and will end group play on Friday the 26th against Slovakia. As another reminder, with there being six groups of four teams, the top two nations in each group will move on to the knockout round, as well as the four best third place finishers from the six groups. So, if the U.S. finishes first or second in the group, even if they were a top four third place team, it would be nearly impossible to speculate on who their next opponent could be. There are just too many variables to decide that, and it isn't as straightforward as what we saw with the World Cup in Qatar. However, I promised predictions for this team, and I plan to make them. I think the opening match in any tournament is all about adrenaline. You really never know what to expect. I know there are high hopes for this U.S. squad, but Ecuador presents a really tough challenge right out of the gate for this U.S. squad. It could be a hostile environment, one of which the U.S. isn't that unfamiliar with, given their region and what they faced during their own qualification. I expect a lot of goals during these youth tournaments. It opens up a lot in these matches. If you have a chance to watch, you should. It's different than the senior level, but it's still pretty spectacular. I think the U.S. and Ecuador play out to a 2-2 draw to open up the group. I think that would be a great result for both nations that they would both gladly take. In our second match against Fiji, I think the U.S. blows them away, as they should. I'm going with a scoreline of 4-0. It could be worse than that, but I won't downplay or disrespect the abilities of Fiji too much. In our final group match, there is a bit of an unknown with Slovakia. Just like Fiji, this is only their second appearance at the U20 World Cup, but qualifying out of Europe over the likes of Spain, Germany, Portugal, and the Netherlands isn't something to overlook. I suspect they'll be a tough opponent. However, the U.S. will know that they are competing for the top spot in their group, and I fully believe they could grab it and beat Slovakia with a 3-2 victory. Although Ecuador could and should also end up on 7 points like the U.S., I think the U.S. claims the top spot out of Group B and moves on to the knockout stage with relative ease. Now, from that point on, it truly is a crapshoot as to who the U.S. could play and how far their draw could take them. In the round of 16, if they are the top spot, then they should have the third place team from either Group A, C, or D. It's a little clearer if they finish as runner-up in Group B, as they would be matched up against the runner-up of Group F, which includes France or South Korea. But finishing top spot in the group could give us someone like New Zealand, Guatemala, or Uzbekistan from Group A, as I fully expect Argentina to finish atop that group. In Group C, you could face off against any one of these four nations: Senegal, Japan, Israel, or Colombia. And from Group D, you'd be looking at the likes of Italy, Brazil, or Nigeria, as I don't think the Dominican Republic stands a chance in that group. Either way, every game will be difficult in the knockout stage. After that match, again, if we win our group, we will face the winner of Group F versus the runner-up from Group E. I suspect that to be France versus Uruguay. If that's the case, we will face France, as they, along with England, are my favorites to lift the trophy. So, my prediction is that the U.S. will lose to France in the quarterfinals. Back at the last U20 World Cup in 2019, the U.S. beat France 3-2 in a major upset, a game which featured Sergiño Dest and Tim Weah. However, most recently in their March friendly, France beat the U.S. 4-0. So, this is a completely different group of players across the board. Can this group pull off some miracles and go the distance and win the first ever FIFA World Cup for our U.S. men's program? Sure, they could. Is it realistic? It absolutely is. But I just think the potential road becomes really difficult too soon for them to advance. This group is really, really strong though, so anything can happen. Either way, Be sure to tune in on Saturday at 2 p.m. Eastern on Fox Soccer Plus or Telemundo, and best of luck to the boys. All right, moving on to the Q&A portion of today, and the first question is one I receive whenever I am speaking to people about Major League Soccer, and that is, how much do those guys even make? And thankfully, MLS released all of the contracts and player salaries this week. So I want to highlight a few for you. The highest paid MLS player is Shaqiri, the Swiss international player that plays for Chicago Fire, who pulls in roughly $7.35 million in base salary and overall around $8.1 million in guarantees. Not too shabby for an MLS player. Toronto FC attacker Lorenzo Insigne comes in second at $7.5 million in guaranteed pay. And in third comes Chicharito Hernandez of the Galaxy at $7.4 million in guarantees. But those are the outliers. The highest paid U.S. player is somehow a name I just mentioned earlier, Jozy Altidore, who pulls in just under $3 million in guaranteed pay for the New England Revolution. Walker Zimmerman is right at $2 million with Nashville. Jesus Ferreira around $1.8 million. Matt Miazga is right at $1.5 million. Miles Robinson right below him at $1.4 million. Kellen Acosta at $1.3 million. Let's talk other notable U.S. players. Jordan Morris, $1.5 million. Aaron Long is at $1.2 million. Brandon Vasquez is right at $1 million. DeAndre Yedlin, $873,000. Shaq Moore at $800K. Sean Johnson, $683,000. And last but not least, my favorite, Christian Roldan, coming in at a very respectable $1.4 million. Not too shabby at all for all of these guys. In taking a bigger look, for all of you college players, let's look at the last two MLS number one draft picks. Ben Bender, who went number one to Charlotte back in 2022, is making just over $105,000 guaranteed this season. And Hamidi Diop, who went number one also to Charlotte this year in 2023, is making about $75,000 this year. So the league minimum comes in at $67,360, just for your reference. But thought it was a fun exercise to go down and look at all these. Up next from Eric Pollan, what did you think of the logo for the 2026 World Cup? FIFA held an announcement on Wednesday of this week from Los Angeles to announce the logo and branding for the next World Cup. And let me just say this. It leaves a lot to be desired. First off, the slogan is, "We are 26." The logo is super simple. And when I say super simple, I mean anyone could do it. It's literally the World Cup trophy superimposed on the numbers 2 and 6 that are stacked together. The white number 2 is on top and the white number 6 is on the bottom with the trophy over the top and FIFA underneath. I don't really care that much about the logos or slogans or anything about the announcement. I just think it's too simple when you think about the millions of dollars that were spent to a marketing firm to come up with it. Go take a look and let me know if you feel any differently. All right, last question of the week. Do you think Man City will win the Champions League? Now, I know this isn't a U.S. soccer question, but I'm answering it because it is clear the person who asked is trolling me for being a Man United fan, and I can respect that. I absolutely, unequivocally believe Man City win not only the Champions League, but they will destroy Inter Milan in the final. It won't even be close by halftime. Man City have looked unstoppable over the last few months, and they deserve the success that they are having. Do I hate it? 1,000% I do. It's the worst. I never want to see them have success. But Pep Guardiola is a special leader. He's brilliant. Every single time I think people have finally figured him out, I'm wrong. Of every manager I have ever watched, he is probably the most spectacular I have seen year after year. I love the way he leads and manages his squads. I think City will also wrap up the Premier League title this weekend. It's been great to see Arsenal completely bottle their season up. And then come June 3rd, when City face off against Man United for the FA Cup trophy and for what should be City's chance to complete their treble quest of winning all three trophies in the same season. In fact, I saw an incredible clip this week of someone asking random City fans if they would rather win the Champions League for the first time in their club history or would they rather lose the Champions League if it meant winning the FA Cup over Man United? And every single person picked the FA Cup win over the Champions League. That's how much disdain that these two clubs have for their rivals. They would rather lose the biggest club achievement that you could ever have than lose to the crosstown rival in the FA Cup. It's unbelievable. But they won't have to worry, though. They will claim their treble. I will continue to get trolled by their fans, and most likely, I'll experience more of the same next season, too. Thanks for the questions. All right, heading on to the final thoughts of the week before we wrap things up. I spoke about the U20 team and made predictions a moment ago, but I left out one change in the squad as Mauricio Cuevas injured his ankle with the Galaxy leading up to heading down to Argentina, and he's been replaced on the World Cup roster by Orlando City defender Michael Halliday. Halliday featured for the U20s during their qualification tournament back in 2022, and he also featured in their March friendlies against France and England. So he is no stranger to the squad and adds a good piece of depth as well. It's a tough break for Cuevas being so close to the start of the tournament, but he's a name to remember for the future. I'll also have an opportunity later today to speak with head coach Mikey Veras and our U20 captain Daniel Edelman in their pre-match press conference tomorrow. And we'll learn a lot more about this change and also their plans for their first match. Zach Steffen and Middlesbrough were knocked out of the English Championship playoffs this week with a 1-0 loss to Coventry City on Wednesday evening. Steffen had reclaimed his starting role for the Michael Carrick-led Borough side, and he's been playing at such a high level since his World Cup admission. It's a shame they fell just short of the playoff final, as it would have meant two U.S. goalkeepers facing off for the chance at the final promotion spot to the Premier League. That means we will now turn our attention to Wembley Stadium on May 27th to watch Ethan Horvath and Luton Town face off against Coventry City for that lucrative spot in the Premier League next season. Horvath's side overturned a 2-1 deficit against Sunderland to win 3-2 on aggregate and advanced to the final earlier this week. It's a tremendous accomplishment for Horvath and Luton Town, seeing as they were just in the fourth tier of English football not too long ago, same as Coventry, and they've also never been in the Premier League. And for the final thought this week, if you were watching the Champions League semifinal coverage this week, you would have seen Jamie Carragher and Thierry Henry alongside Kate Abdo and Micah Richards during the conversation they had about Flo joining the U.S. men's national team and being an Arsenal product. Carragher stated the following of Henry: "Thierry, he's linked to Arsenal. They haven't made a decision at U.S. soccer for the coach right now. So come on, there's a vacancy for manager and you've got an Arsenal player that you know quite well. We know him well, friend of the program." Henry immediately joked by pointing to his phone on the desk and saying, "See my phone? It's not ringing." To which Carragher looked into the camera, pointed to Henry and pleaded with U.S. soccer to call Henry for the job. I have brought up coaching candidates previously and mentioned Henry since he coached Montreal FC in the past and played for the New York Red Bull, and most recently was on the Belgium World Cup coaching staff. Henry spoke of Flo's decision to represent the U.S. men's national team and says he is very good. We needed a striker, but the most important thing is for him to play. He didn't think he would be at Arsenal next season, but with England, he said he would have found it more difficult to come by with their current striking options. One thing he did say is that he's a great player for the United States because he is that nine type of striker that we've been missing. Do I think U.S. soccer will call Henry and ask him to be the next head coach? I don't. If they haven't already done their due diligence on him at this point, or at least inquired about him, I'd be a little surprised. Do I think he would be the right fit? He could be. He would be different. He's a brilliant soccer mind, but as far as coaching our national team, I'm not sure he would find much different success than what we saw out of another former legendary European striker in Jurgen Klinsmann. And I think U.S. soccer is still licking their wounds from that stint. So I don't think Henry's phone will be ringing anytime soon. On top of that, I'll leave you with this bit of news before the weekend. Jesse Marsh is going to be named the head coach of the U.S. men's national team and will take over after the Gold Cup wraps up. Buckle up. All right, well, that's it for today's episode. Once again, and as always, I appreciate you for listening. If you have a question for me or would like something specific to be discussed on the show, please send me a message on Instagram or Twitter, or email me directly at will.clark@thesoccerpines.com. Thanks again to the Drowned Lands Brewing for this Silent Stars and for bringing or being the beer feature this week. Until next time, cheers, my friends.